Okay, here we go. Good morning, I'm Susan. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. You'll get a 5-minute warning. I had to pull out my trusty, good morning, my trusted little photo album that has gone with me everywhere for 20 plus years, because I'm so used to showing them on the screen. There aren't any current ones, but here I am. It doesn't get any more current than this. So you get to see what I look like today. I've been coming into these rooms since the 1980s when this meeting did have a kitchen sink in the room at the log cabin, and I came in at 250 pounds wearing a size 26 dress. I've lost more than 100 pounds. I don't say the exact amount because I don't want people thinking, oh my God, she blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. I'm at a normal and healthy body weight for my size. I never went on a diet to gain over 100 pounds. That was not the plan. And I knew nothing of 12-step meetings. I knew a lot about dieting from when I was 4 and 5 years old, and I have very vivid memories of stealing food that early on and lying about it. The principles of the first 3 steps are honesty, hope, and faith. And I hope this morning that you will listen to the invitation. And if I rattle your cage, maybe that is a good thing. Because I came here for years and you rattled my cages and I just sat in the back, normally would have a hoodie on or something, and be very annoyed. And you kept on smiling at me and loving me and welcoming me back. And I'll just read these few lines to you, and I brought my books with me. I'm so used to being at home now all the time. I always brought my big book with me, and I love the 24-hour day book. And so as we come here and we sit down and our cameras are on and we can see each other, it says, keep a listening ear, an ear bent to catch the sound of the gentle knocking at the door of your heart by the Spirit of God. Then open the door of your heart and let God's Spirit come in. And I just think that is beautiful. Because God has rewired my heart, and I didn't think I needed that. You know, I knew I have a great job, I keep a great home, don't you know, I have so many friends, and da 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 da, and I bought you this, and we did that, and here I am. And yet, my life was unmanageable. And there's 2 parts to that first step, and that was part of what I couldn't handle, because I went on diets, and I was very, very successful. I got all the bells and whistles and all the claps, and as I say, then the big M word came along, and that would be maintenance. And okay, well, I had all this jigginess inside of here that, young people employed at Nutrisystem for the summer, they didn't know what was going on with me when I came back a week later for maintenance, and the scale had changed a lot. They didn't know quite what to say. And, oh, you get all these additional things for the week. Well, I would go out into the car park, sit in my car, gather the goods, and there were the additional calories. I have a spiritual malady. And it talks about on page 64 of the big book that when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So I didn't have the power on my own to stay stopped. I always believed in something greater than myself, but I didn't know how to employ that. On a Sunday night, I did, though. Big chats, big plans, lots of charts, vision boards, lots of sheets going on. But my memory fails to keep me in check. So Monday morning would come, when I still had my curly hair, which is still there underneath all of this, I could get off the train and it could be drizzling. And, well, foiled again, Batman, one more time. I have to go off and I have to soothe. And I don't have a power greater than myself. And, today as a speaker, as a member of Overeaters Anonymous, it's not my job to convince you of anything. And again, it tells me this. You see, I have these books which are instructions, and I'm really good at giving instructions and telling people what to do. But here I don't get to do that. But I have taken all of these suggestions and all of these musts in these books today, and it has changed my life for the better. And it says that I'm not going to pronounce you as anything, whether you're vomiting, starving, compulsively overeating. I can't help you with that. I can tell you that there is a pamphlet that OA has, that all 12-step meetings have, and you tick the boxes. And I tick, 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 tick every single one, every single one. So it says that you can quickly diagnose yourself. Thought wasn't going to recognize my face for the minute there, and I'm sitting right here. And so here comes the hammer. It says, step over to your nearest barroom, bakery, wherever it is that you go, and try some controlled eating, vomiting, starving. I could do that. I could do that. I got the ribbons at Weight Watchers. That's how long ago I started going, the ribbons. I did a photo shoot for Nutrisystem, all kinds of stuff. Or that frothy emotional appeal that it talks about in the doctor's opinion. And yet there I was, banging my fist one more time. How am I back here with the clothes that were this big and now they're this big? Why am I going to these shops with people who I don't think look like me and yet they do? How am I asking for a seatbelt extender flying back from England? How is it being screamed down the whole aisle? How am I being asked if I'm pregnant and I'm actually lying? I'm actually lying because I'm so humiliated and I'm so embarrassed. So we go over to these barrooms, bakeries, wherever we go, and that's great. It says try to drink, eat, vomit, purge, starve, whatever you do, and stop abruptly. And that's the hammer. I couldn't stop abruptly. Once I started, I couldn't stop. So once I stop, how do I start? You know, how do I keep myself from starting again? And it's these 12 steps. It's working them precisely how they were written. And I haven't liked all of it. And, you know, can be very righteous and have a lot of justification over a lot of the words in these books. But today I have cleared away that wreckage and I continue and I practice really, really hard to live these principles, to practice these principles in all my affairs. And it says I'm going to make spiritual progress. It doesn't talk about my food plan. So again, probably going to pee you off. It doesn't say you're going to make spiritual progress with your food plan. It says with a relationship. I have an abstinence that works for me, doesn't work for you or you, and I have a food plan that works for me, for my age, for my size, for foods I like and dislike, and foods I cannot touch, things that are heroin. And I think, of course, I would never stick a needle in my arm. Well, I let them stick them in other places with things that would, you know, let me get thin, so I can not say never. You know, my best thinking, as you've heard me say a lot, and apologies if you have, and even when you're listening to this later, I volunteered to have my jaw wired shut. I went with a girl who thought it was a good idea, so I'm like, maybe that could be quite good. And I left there and immediately I thought, what am I going to do? But because I am an addict with food, because I ate the way Bill Wilson and all of these members of Alcoholics Anonymous drank, you just stick things in your mouth that are caloric and that they melt, and you drive through a lot and you go with straws. So for 3 months, I maintained 250 pounds. Do you know how much I was slurping through a straw? But that's who I am. That's the gutter compulsive overeater that I am. And you know, the promises give you so much, but if you look at the promises in reverse, they can also be pretty scary. So I came in and out of the rooms, and I would go to Serenity Sunday, and I would go to Focus. Focus on Permanent Recovery in the Valley, and all of these people, the same people were there, and Tara would be there with his crew, and Natalie would be there, God rest her soul, and Roseanne would be there, and Barbara O, and all these other people would be in the Valley. And it's like, what is wrong with them all? Why are they here and they're so happy? And I am so fat and miserable. I am so fat and miserable. And I wasn't just slightly plump, okay? Let's just call it what it was. When your thighs rub together until you bleed, you are pretty overweight. But I still couldn't do it. And then the day came, funnily enough, after a trip home to England with my family, when I realized I was done. And I remember clearly, I used to live in the Valley, going into Gelson's on Havenhurst, and wandering up and down the aisles. and there was nothing there to buy, and yet there was a whole store to buy. And those colorful vegetables, the good stuff, the bad stuff. There was the dark alley aisles right down the middle, and then the ones on the outside, which, you know, normally has the, you know, the saner choices, but nothing was working. And that's when I heard that whisper, you know, God kept launching that search and rescue for me, but Susan needed a different color pink life vest. She needed this, or I have a nail appointment, or I have blah, blah, blah. It's not going to suit me. And it got worse, never better. I know for myself, and I believe that this is permanent, progressive, and fatal, and that progression is aggressive. Normal people don't go to lose 5 pounds and then gain 70 and gain 80. And, you know, 250 was the last number that I knew of the last time that I looked. So I came back from the trip and knew all of these lovely people who were probably available here because they raised their hands, but I still had a lurking notion. So I knew somebody who had gone to Florida and who was in OA there, and she'd gotten it. She was very large. She was thin now, and that's all I cared about. So I called the person who sponsored her in Fort Lauderdale and convinced her, I lied basically, that there was nobody here available and what was I to do. So she tried very hard to deter me and say, well, you'll have to call me at 4:30 in the morning, 5 days a week. Okay, you want a battle, I'm in. And I did it. And God started to rewire my heart. I went there, I gave her a fifth step. I lost my weight. I definitely had that pink cloud for a long time because my clothes fit for more than a month. This was like, this is magnificent. What is going on? And my bank account is looking so good now. And then I started, you know, seeing you all differently, right? I was uncovering, discovering, and discarding. And God was granting me and handing me a new pair of glasses with a free prescription, a spiritual prescription that never ever runs out. And I got into that spiritual gym with everybody. And I wake up in the mornings and I read, and you can see all of these pages are the ones that are loose. And I, you know, especially over the last few years being on Zoom together, I have so many notes from different people, and I've just learned and spiritually grown so much. And, you know, it talks about, we hope that one day wherever you go, one of us will meet you on the way. Well, now it's really true. And whether you choose to be on Zoom or not, over the last few years you have been. And we get to go and do these things. You know, I believe part of God bringing me here to America was to find these rooms. But now when I'm in England, I went to a convention this year. How bonkers is that? Because I wanted to. Because all of my friends, some of whom I'd met, some of who'd come out to the birthday party, they were there for the weekend. And so I spent 2.5 days there, meeting other people, just getting to talk and meet people and seeing people who are little squares. If you go to Europe, I have all the meetings, but they have a meeting every day at 7 a.m. with well over 100 people with their cameras on, called the Early Bird. And there were all of those people. And I love when you meet people from Zoom. Oh, you're taller. Oh, you're shorter. Oh, you're this. You know, it's so amazing. But that's a God thing. And it says that this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. So how am I going to keep doing this? Well, it tells me from the beginning again is I have to give this away. I have to. And there's always time to do that. I have a sponsor who is actually speaking at the online kitchen sink meeting right now. We've got a little confused. She's speaking at the kitchen sink. And I go, you are? Are you sure? Because I am. And I said, I don't think we're speaking together. And I didn't realize that you had split, because I knew at one point this was a hybrid. So that's just amazing. So I continue to put my hand in the hand of my sponsors. She has her hand in her sponsor, and we continue on. We continue on spreading this message because there are so many people who don't know. And we go through stuff here. We go through stuff together. We went through a pandemic together. We couldn't see each other. We quickly got on Zoom. You know, I've been to your showers. I've been to your weddings. I've been to funerals. And it's unfortunate. If you've been around here for a while, like some of you have, we sometimes go to each other's funerals, and it's really, really sad. Very, very heartbreaking. And, you know, what happens is it's very, very easy to forget. Very, very easy to forget. And it tells me, again, here, I don't have to make any of this up, and I can be a great storyteller. But it says that the fact for most compulsive overeaters, for reasons yet obscure, we have lost the power of choice in compulsively eating, purging, starving. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. And here's the part that I always forgot. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of asking for a seatbelt extender, legs rubbing until they bleed, lying that you're pregnant, X, Y, Z, you know, whatever it is, we can keep adding to that list, right? Because it says that unless I have an entire psychic change, this will repeat it over and over and over. And we could fill every single wall in this space and some with that over and over. And that's what I kept on doing. And I had to put my white flag all the way in. I was spiritually bankrupt, and it talks about that in the AA 12 and 12. And I have a friend who always says, you know, food addiction held the mortgage to my soul. Now, I'm sure at one point you've all had a lease to an apartment, you bought a house, you bought a car, something. Who reads the fine print? Not me, and I'm a homeowner, trust me, and I haven't, they go, sign here, do this, and if this happens, that happens, I'm like, okay. But here I have trusted in all of you. I've done that thing that I couldn't do in person, that free fall thing that they show that I'm sure I could never fall backwards and do it. But I have done that because I am a seriously alcoholic with food, and there is no middle of the road solution for me. I know what will happen to me if I just have that lurking notion of, you've got this, Suze, you know, you can just, and it will be okay. It will be okay. And then it's that build up, right? Those behaviors more than anything that happened before the bite. I've lost a parent in these rooms who I wasn't close with, and my mum was schizophrenic and I didn't grow up with her. And through working these steps, I was able to reach out to her, knowing that it was going to be an interesting journey. But I didn't go there with any expectations. But I just wanted to go. And it was interesting. It just was. And she was one of us. You know, she got me going on my this and of that. And if you do this, you will get that. You know, that's when the frothy emotional appeals started for me. And I continued it on with myself. Every time I went on a diet, off we trot, here we go, where are we going to buy everything? Threw everything away. I mean, the bags I have taken, if we had had the boutique at the time at the birthday party 20 plus years ago, or maybe I just wasn't paying attention, maybe you did, that could have been another thing. You would have had yearly outfits from me, and great ones at that, let me just say. So, you know, I had to set aside everything I think I thought I knew. And my mom, you know, she just had a very, very rough life, very, very rough life. And she passed away 5 years ago on her own, morbidly obese. And it was several days before anybody found her because she wasn't willing to do what was necessary to keep, thank you, five more, to keep herself right. And it just, to this day, it breaks my heart. It really, really does. And it wasn't because I was a bad daughter or any of those things. I have none of that because, you know, mental illness is mental illness, but it also shows what this disease can do. I could show you pictures of my mom so anorexically thin, and she was 5'2", horrifying. And like me, you would blink and you wouldn't recognize her going down the street. My sister is in these rooms. That is fantastic. We often laugh. It's not, I mean, it wasn't funny at the time. I did not gracefully 12-step her, but thank God her God was bigger than my pitch in the changing room of a clothing store. So, you know, according to the book, and I believe this to be true, you know, we are uniquely qualified to help each other because nobody is going to understand the disturbing things that we have done with food. Where am I going to say to somebody, oh, you think that funny, that scene in Seinfeld's funny with George Costanza? It is kind of funny, but when you've done it, it's a little disturbing. And it turns your stomach, because I've eaten off of your plate. I've licked your plates, even if I don't know you. I've stolen your food. I don't do that today. I live a radically honest life. Radically. And I don't always love it, but there is always somebody who knows what's going on with me. I share my nightly review with three other people. I love my life today. I have no idea why I resisted for so long, but I don't need to know. All I know is that when that search and rescue came around, you know, I got on that boat and God has performed miracles in my life. Now, does it look like all of my vision boards? No. George Clooney married somebody else. That's okay. And it hasn't quite been the Disney princess life that I thought. But you know what? I believe that this is the better life for me today. I give back to OA as much as I can. Because I need it to carry on, because I know what will happen if you all disappear and go away. So I hope that I have carried a hopeful message to other compulsive overeaters this morning, and I hope that, like me, that your life will take on new meaning. And it can be hard to see at first, but you know, then the curtains get drawn back and that broad highway is so expansive. It's so amazing, and I love that we have literally now 24-hour-a-day recovery available to us. I mean, some of you don't live here anymore, and we get to be together regardless. So wherever you go, there we are, and we will meet you along the way. And Alex, thank you again so much for inviting me to speak, and I will finish. Okay. All right, so the basket's been passed. This is the time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leaders are my own and not those of Overeats Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you do not need to identify yourself. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast. And then, leader, please restate the question. Yes, got it. All right.
Thank you so much. What do you do in the evening when you are feeling just like absolutely sad about that situation go on?
Okay, so the question is, what do
happening there, but I don't have
I got it. No problem. What do you do at night when life feels jiggy all around you? How about that for the question? I have made a point of coming into these rooms and sitting all the way down and getting into the center of the herd. And I don't even know if I said how much time I have. So I have 24 years now. And I have made... No, don't. Really, no need. But what I have done in that time is built very deep and meaningful relationships with people who know me inside and out, who know from the tone of my voice what's going on with me. I write my nightly review and I pay attention to what is there. And as with here, where can I be helpful? Where can I be in the solution? That's the best I can do in that way, and I make calls to people who I can freely talk to. But again, trying to stay in the solution, because if I get into that bitter morass of self-pity, like All About Me, I forget the we as a whole. And you know, we start out the book with that beautiful script W, which if I turn it upside down is, you know, the Do Re Mi 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 song. So that's, hope that helps. Please.
Could you talk about your spiritual journey, your relationship to a higher power? Did you have one? Were you in it? Did you have to build it? That's
right. The question is my spiritual journey. Did I have a relationship with God, or, you know, how did that formulate? So, yes, absolutely. So, I always believed in something. not super religious, but have a religion that I identify with, that I am a part of. And as I think I said when I spoke, I definitely talk to God on Sunday nights. So I come here and it says, came to believe, and it talks about how this is going to grow. And in We Agnostics, you know, it spends 10 pages telling us where we're going to find that power. And I will share with you, you know, one place where I really, really found it, which was, it's just my story. So I came in, I would do the meditation, I would sit there really uncomfortably. There was no meditations on, there wasn't online probably at the time, actually. And I think I had a Sony Walkman, and then we went to little iPods, and there wasn't anything, you know, no Spotify gods or anything like that. So I had to sit there with me, myself, and I. Really loud, really, really noisy. And about a year after recovery, I decided to do a 3-day walk, and I had to train for it. And I couldn't train my girlfriends who I did it with because they live far apart. They had kids to get ready for school. And because I went to everything that was suggested at one of the workshops, they said, learn to walk with nothing on in your ears, because that weekend we need you to be paying full attention. So you can't walk with any Walkmans, iPods, whatever it was at the time. So guess who was training for 9 months? Me, myself, and God. So first of all, I learned it's highly scary to be a pedestrian in Los Angeles. Nobody pays attention whatsoever. So you need to not have anything going on in your ears, because you could lose parts of yourself. And I would start walking, and I had to build these walks up from 4 miles all the way to 26 miles. So that's a lot of time. It's a lot of time. And I just started out on this journey with God. I can't really explain it to you, but it wouldn't be all about what the dress was in the window or what the this was. It was just this silence. The chatter quieted down, and the walks that seemed so long suddenly weren't. And that was, again, God doing for me. So during that year period of training, 9 to 12 months, whatever it was, just God came in. You know, I opened that door more and more. It talks about that in step 3 in the AA 12 and 12. It talks about the door of willingness. And other pages they're out. And it says that once you place this key of willingness in the lock, and I'm just going to paraphrase, the door is ever so slightly open. You can always open it some more. Only self-will will slam it shut. And I was on a mission. I wanted to do this walk, definitely. So there was no self-will. I was walking with two girlfriends who had breast cancer, who unfortunately aren't with us anymore. But the main thing here is it tells me that God won't leave me, because it tells me it will always respond the moment you pick up that key of willingness again. So that's how that happened for me. And I think during the last 4 years, and during us all being on Zoom again, I just seeing that miracle, God working in all of our lives. People on meetings with us in India, here, there, and who never would have been able to go to a meeting, and they still can't. It just doesn't exist in their area. So I hope that helps. Terrell first, then you. Sorry.
So what do you internally, personally, get from all the service that you do?
The question is, what do I get internally from all this service that I do? I get so much joy. I honestly do. It warms my heart to when we're all together. You know, last year at the birthday party, I quell the whole weekend is the only word I can give you. There's other words I can give you, but I'm not going to have time to interpret them. But it fills me up in a way that literally my heart can explode. Like, a lot of you have children. I'm sure it's when you first hold a child, or you see your baby taking those first steps, or you fall in love. It's that first kiss. It's that stuff of seeing that joy in the rooms and people meeting, and also just giving back, because people never ever gave up on me. And there is so much service to be had. And often in life we think, they're going to do it. You know, I'm the oldest in a large family. And there's always someone to do it until there isn't. So I definitely have the personality of, let's just not waste time, chop, chop, let's go and just get this done. But it really does fill my heart. So thank you.
Thank you. How do you use program when, like, someone who's unavoidable in your life has done you wrong?
Okay, how do I use program when someone in my life has done me wrong? So for me, I don't separate program in my life. This is a design for living. I take this with me. I'm up and down the staircase. The tools, I do them. I couldn't do this without a sponsor. Couldn't do this without literature. I need my phone because I need to call you and go, bah! I need it. So I work these steps around it. And when, you know, earlier this year I had a situation that I didn't like that did not go my way at all. And I had to do I just had to do a fourth step. And what always sets me right, and funnily enough, my page is open on this, on page 52, you know, here are the bedevilments. And I have mine written in the personal pronoun, which is even yuckier. Once in a workshop, we all had to read this aloud with over 200 people. Again, if I'm having trouble with personal relationships and I can't control my emotional natures, you know, again, I have to look. It's like it's all yippee-yay to do a fourth step. But today, most people, I can say, do a fourth column as to what was their part. Well, I just told you, we've been working together for a couple of months here. Can't you hear how everyone's done me wrong? So I have to uncover, discover, and discard what that unrest is in me. And maybe some wrongs can't be righted. I can't speak to that. And, you know, I don't know what the situation is. But I can't get that emotionally disturbed because I know where it will walk me back to eventually. Or it'll be, I won't return this phone call, I'm not going to do it, it wasn't so bad, and somebody else will do it, or I won't have my camera on, or I'll just keep telling them I'm busy on Saturday mornings. So then I'm starting to push out, you know, all of, you know, I'm not using my spiritual prescription. So I would, you know, suggest doing some writing around it, and really, you know, what am I fighting for here, you know? So that's just me. Hi.
Could you describe your abstinence?
Sure. Can I describe my abstinence? What do you want me to describe? Because my abstinence and my food plan, it hasn't changed. My abstinence for me is very black and white. I have two items that I knew I couldn't eat because I knew it wasn't normal to eat loaves and gallons. I knew that other people didn't do that. So I personally, again, don't believe in red, yellow, green. It's yes or no. Because otherwise I will always live in the middle. I also believe it's possible to lose all your weight and stay there. I have evidence of that. But again, because it's very black and white. And my food plan, has it changed? Not really. It really is the same, to be honest with you. But again, my abstinence and my food plan are two different things. My abstinence is a no-fly zone. It really is. And then, you know, I have a food plan that works for me. So.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your service, Susan. That was great to hear you. You mentioned that you live a radically honest life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like, that's not my default. So, could you talk about that?
Yes. The question is if I can talk about radical honesty. And I heard that word. I did a couple of Herb Kay workshops, and he talks a lot about the Latin word for this, the this word for that, and I don't know if some of you have been. And he talks about radical honesty. And as addicts, I believe, we're honest, but sometimes it's just a smidge that you can leave out. It's just a smidge. So, well, yeah, I don't know, maybe it wasn't me. And that was always my song in my house. It wasn't me, and it was always me. So it's leaving no stone left unturned, you know, trusting that God has got me. So not being a schmo, being radically honest, you know, say what you mean what you say, and don't be mean when you say it. Maxine taught me that many, many moons ago, one of the first things she taught me all those years ago. And I thought that that was really weird, because everything that we said in my house was who shouted the loudest and who won. So how else do you win if you aren't mean? So I think it's just having those people who, again, who know you and no stone is left unturned. You know, I'm sure when you be home by 11, I was there at 11, I was there. No, you were there at 10 past. So even though that's not what you're asking, but it's those kinds of things. It's not taking on more than I need to. It's on the food scale. I weigh and measure my food when I'm at home. That's what works for a girl like me. Don't take a scale into a restaurant, but there's a number and there's a number. And it can be over a bit and oh well, or it's spot on. So it's those tiny things that being spot on to me, again, allows me to live freely in the sunlight of the spirit. So I guess it's also just not bending the truth in any single way, which I could be really good at. I have a few more minutes, please. Oh, and then Kathy, you'll be after.
Thank you so much. Is there anything that you would say to a newcomer about putting down the food? That's one of the things that always puzzles me, is how to help people put down the food.
Okay, so the question is how to help a newcomer put down the food. Got it. We have, today there are nutritionists around who work with people in these rooms. I am not one of them. Do I have, you know, my own PhD in dieting? Absolutely, but you can see it didn't help me. So I have a lot of information. There's also, we have a pamphlet, Dignity of Choice, if people can't afford to, or there are other pay and weigh programs. You know, for me, going through the doctor's opinion and Bill's story, and today we have so many helpful podcasts as well, really pointing out where you get that frothy emotional appeal from, those foods that I can't walk away from, you know, they just become my everything. The foods that I can't eat with grace, the foods that I eat and you all disappear at the dinner table. Because that can happen. So, you know, reading through all of this stuff and, you know, just again knowing that it will never ever suffice. One will never be enough. I used to sponsor a lady who went to see Chuck C years ago, and he told her that if the ocean out there, he used to live in Laguna, was filled with whiskey, it would still never be enough for you. So I have to immediately start to replace it with something else. And if it's the power that comes from the group, fantastic. But also hiding in meetings all day don't help. It doesn't help, because there'll be plenty of people who say, well, I went to 1,000 meetings all year and I'm still eating. But did you do the work? Did you do the work? Were you radically honest? You know, where were you holding back? So you have to find that person who you trust, you know, get in the boat with them, take their hand. So I hope that helps.
I don't know how much work you've done with emotional sobriety, but can you talk about that?
Sure. Don't have the letter handy. Emotional sobriety, Bill Wilson wrote a wonderful letter and called it The Final Frontier. And, you know, a lot I would say with my family situations, with my mom, and come from a large family, we've all had something. There's been drug addiction, there's been jail time, there's been all kinds of stuff that has gone on. And it's to stay emotionally fit is very different to picking up a 5-pound weight. Because as was asked, you know, how do you stay out of it? And I just keep working, keep doing what I do every single day and trusting in situations that it's like, you know, how is this going to end? I don't know. You know, how are we here again? All of those questions. So, you know, I do believe that God is constantly doing for me what I can never do for myself. And, you know, like that little piece that I read in the beginning, and I said, listen for that invitation. You know, God's always whispering in my ear. So it's a journey. It continues on. I do different readings. Together with you, we've been to workshops, we've done things, and I just have to know I'm never going to graduate from here, physically, emotionally, or spiritually. You know, I need to keep my feet firmly planted on the ground, which it talks about in the book as well. It's not like I can't get giddy or like something or do something, but wherever I go, there I am, and I can't forget who I am at my core. So I hope that helps. Is that it?
Just 1 minute, you're done.
I think we're good. Okay. Thank you.